So you want to hear about that night, right? Well, I'm not surprised. Everybody wants to hear about that night. And frankly, I'm glad that you asked. You see, you've got it all wrong. That's right, you've got it all wrong. What do you mean? What do I mean? Well, I've heard what you say about me. Don't think that I haven't heard what you say about me. I was the bad guy. I was the villain. I was the jerk. Well, that is what you say about me, isn't it? How many times have you been to one of those Christmas pageants where there's some poor kid wearing his dad's bathrobe with a dish towel wrapped over his head, standing off stage, pointing at the poor pregnant couple saying, "There's no room at the inn. There's no room at the inn. There's no room at the inn." The way you tell it, I wouldn't like me much either. Every year, the good old innkeeper sends the poor pregnant pair back out into the harsh and uncaring night. I mean, come on. Really? Who would do that? So you bet I appreciate the opportunity to set the record straight. You see, it was one of those harebrained government plans. You know, the ones they're always coming up with to complicate the lives of common folk, aren't they? And that's Caesar Augustus. How this guy ever became leader of the free world, it's beyond me. Well, it was his idea to do that census to begin with. And it sent everybody packing. You see, you were supposed to return to your place of birth to be registered. For what? To pay taxes, of course. But that's what brought them to the door. What do I know? Anyway, when you say that there was no room at the inn, you're right about that. It's not like we ran Motel 6s back in the day, you know. No, our inns were small and simple. Mine smaller than most. So when I say I was booked, I truly was booked. The whole town was booked. You couldn't get a room in all of Greater Bethlehem that night. And then the knock on the door at midnight. Midnight knocks, well, they're never good. Somebody's in trouble. Somebody's going to want something. Somebody's going to drag you into something you don't want to be dragged into. So when the knock came on my door, I had half a mind to ignore it. Don't ask me why I didn't. I'm still not quite sure myself. All I know is there I was, staring right at them. They looked scared. They looked tired. They looked overwhelmed. And then he launched into his speech. They had come such a long way. They had nowhere else to go. They were still a day or two away from their nearest family. And the girl, she was about to have a baby. A baby! A baby! It's not like I could miss it. There she was, all doubled over, looking like she was about to burst. She was young. Too young. But you see, here's what often gets lost in the details. When I say there was no room at the inn, that was true. So I took him to the only space that I had to offer, my stable. I swept it out. I cleared out the cows. I put some fresh straw in the manger. And then I woke my wife. I waited. And I waited for the single greatest sound known in all creation, the first cry of a newborn. That's the sound of hope. And tonight, that sound was coming from my barn. Now, all your nativity scenes, none of them do it justice. None of them truly capture what it was. As I looked in and saw them holding that baby, I felt a calmness fall over the place that night. Heck, it felt like a calmness felt over the entire world. You see, there was no room at the inn. But we made room. That's how it happened. Thanks for asking.
Washington, D.C., subway. A man walks in with his violin and begins to play. Played for 1 hour. Played six pieces by Bach. In that time, they figure about 2,000 people walked past him. It was about 3 minutes in that a middle-aged man noticed there was music playing at all, the first one to kind of realize that something was happening. He slowed his pace and stopped for just a moment, but then he hurried on to meet his schedule. It was about 4 minutes after that that the violinist received his first dollar. A woman threw the money in the hat, and without stopping, she just continued to walk on by. It was 6 minutes after that that a young man leaned against the wall to listen, then looked at his watch and hurried on his way. At 10 minutes, a 3-year-old boy stopped, but his mother tugged him along. The kid stopped to look at the violinist again, but again the mother pushed hard and the child continued to walk, turning his head back to look at the violinist all the time. That action was repeated throughout the hour. Children taking notice, but every time the parent pushing them along, keeping them moving quickly. 45 minutes. The musician played continuously. Only 6 people stopped to listen, and then only for a very short while. About 20 people gave money, but they continued to walk on their normal pace. The man collected a total of $32. 1 hour, he finished, and silence once again overtook the subway station. No one noticed. No one applauded. There wasn't any recognition. No one seemed to know that that violinist was Joshua Bell. one of the greatest violin players in the world. And that he had spent the last hour playing six of the most intricate pieces ever written in the history of music on a violin that has been valued at $3.5 million. That evening, Joshua Bell would play those six pieces again to a sold-out concert hall where people paid upwards of $100 to hear him. Something beautiful was going on in the midst of everyday life. Something amazing going on in the midst of everyday life. Something that was a once-in-a-lifetime experience was happening right in front of people, and no one seemed to notice. It's exactly what happened on that first Christmas. Oh, you know the story. Linus tells it to us every year on the Charlie Brown Christmas. He says it like this. In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. This was the first census that took place while Quirinus was governor of Syria, and everyone went to his town to get registered. So Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to Bethlehem, to the town of David, because he belonged to the house line of David. And he went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. And while they were there, the time came for the baby to be born. And she gave birth to her firstborn son. She wrapped him in cloth and placed him in a manger because there was no room at the inn. No room at the inn. First Christmas comes in a world that was hopping busy. People were on the go. They had places to go and things to do. There was hustle and bustle going on all around of it. In the midst of it, God came knocking. God came knocking, and here's the deal, barely anybody noticed. I mean, you can't miss this in the story. God is the one going door to door, looking for a place to enter our story. Knocking on door after door after door, hoping and praying that somewhere somebody will open the door and let God in. God, the creator of the universe, is looking for room to enter the creation he created. God wants to enter the scene, enter the story. God is looking for an opening into the midst of our busy, busy lives. And nobody seemed to notice. Is there a no vacancy sign hung on our hearts, even at Christmas time? Maybe especially at Christmas time. For this is the season where we most anticipate his coming, and yet it's the season that probably has the least amount of room for him to enter again anyway. Right? The lists are long, and we are halfway through the Advent season. And if you haven't got it done, boy, you got 2 weeks to get it done now. And now it is time to really crank it up into gear. There are cards to send, and cookies to bake, and trees to decorate, and cards to write. All of those things still need to happen, and if they haven't happened, boy, you are starting to run out of time. And I can tell by the looks around the room, Pastor, you're meddling right now. Would you just leave us alone? We know exactly what has left to do. But is there room? Is there room for God at Christmas? Room for God to enter the story? Because truth be told, isn't that what we all really want anyway? I mean, isn't that what we really want, is God to come into our lives, this sense of connection to something bigger than ourselves, to be connected into the reality of the candles we light each week along that journey? Don't you want that hope? Don't you want that peace? Don't you want that joy? I mean, forget about the sweater, right? Or the new gadget or the gadget that everybody wants. What we want most is God to enter the story. But like the people walking through Bethlehem 2,000 years ago, our lives are simply too packed, too busy, too full. There's no room at the inn. The innkeeper visited us today. Who knew the innkeeper had such good hair, huh? Did you know that? The poor innkeeper. Has anyone had to play the innkeeper in the Christmas pageant before? I had to play the innkeeper like 3 years in a row at the Christmas pageant growing up. That's a tough role to play. You know, they strap you into your dad's bathrobe, they put a dish towel on your head, and then they make you stand at the side of the stage, and your only words are, "No room at the inn." Right? It makes you really popular with the middle school girls when you're the, I never got to be the shepherd or the wise men, never got to be Joseph. I was always the innkeeper. You know, just one year I wanted to be like a king, but I was always the innkeeper. No room. No room at the inn. But when you look at the scripture and you look at it closely, we see that there couldn't have been any room at the inn. This wasn't like a policy that they had. It was reality. I mean, this was a busy time. The census was taking place. People were on the move and on the go, dislocated from their homes. So it is true, there was no room at the inn. And I know what you're saying to me when I talk about making room in our lives for God. You're saying, "Jeff, it's not a policy. It's a reality. Our lives are simply too full and too busy. It's not that we don't want it. We just simply don't have the space." But our innkeeper this morning suggested when there is no room, you can make room. And that's maybe what happened 2,000 years ago. While there was no room, they went out and they found room. They cleaned things out of the way in order for something new, something miraculous, something God-like to happen. Maybe that's how Christmas always works. Whether it's in December or 5 months from now in the middle of spring, Christmas maybe comes, God maybe comes into our lives and into our story when we, regular everyday people like the innkeeper, people like you and like me, make room for God to do something new in our lives and in our story. You know, because we all want something new to happen in our lives, but we don't always want to make the room for that to happen. I have been on a perpetual quest to knock off about 50, 60, 70, 80 pounds, right? I always joke with people, I've lost 300 pounds in my life, it's just the same 50, right? Here's the deal, I want to lose the weight, but seldom have I made room for the things that will make that happen. And it's happening now. Why? Because I've made room for vegetables, right? Making room for a lifestyle change that's going to create the kind of change that I want to see in my life. Often I have couples, married couples, come into my office and talk about how they don't feel like they're connecting. And the first question I ask them is, "When is your date night?" "Oh, we don't have time for a date night. We don't have time to connect." You've got to create space for the change that you want to see happen in your life. And if you want to have God enter your story, then we've got to be like the innkeeper. Despite the fact that the rooms of our life are full, we must go to the back and clear out space for God to do something new in our lives. If you want God to enter into your life, think about what you're going to do in the new year. You're going to make space for, we're going to be doing some new Bible studies and new things like that. Are you willing to make some space for God to enter into your life in a new way so that Christmas may indeed come? I'll never forget when that image of the innkeeper and the importance of making room took on a whole new significance for me. It was the very first year that I lived here in the city of Detroit. Bridget and I had moved here from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. We came to Detroit to do a one-year urban mission program, and 12 years later, we are still doing our one-year urban mission program here in the city of Detroit. We lived in southwest Detroit. I worked at Big Brothers Big Sisters. Bridget worked at Crossroads, helping homeless men find employment. And it was that Christmas, that first Christmas, that we lived here in Detroit. It was the Sunday before, and we had our car packed, ready to go back to Wisconsin. And on our way home, we stopped at a worship service. It was a worship service held at a little Episcopal church on the corner of Michigan and Trumbull, right across from Old Tiger Stadium. I drove by that yesterday. That stadium is gone. But right across from there is this little Episcopal church, St. Peter's Episcopal Church, and we went in for a worship service. It wasn't just any kind of worship service, though. It was a memorial service. And it wasn't just any kind of a memorial service. This was a special memorial service. See, this was a memorial service held by CAS Community Social Services and COTS and the Salvation Army. It was a memorial service for homeless men and women who had died during the last year, and there was nobody there to remember. Their names were listed simply by their first name, most of them Bill or Jim, Susan, or the man with the blue hat, or the woman who died under the bridge. And Faith Fowler, if you don't know Faith Fowler, Faith is a United Methodist pastor who dedicated her life to working in the CAS corridor and serving those who often get forgotten. Faith stood up to give a prayer. And she said, God, we're making room for all kinds of things in this city. We're making room for new stadiums. We're making room for casinos. And yet today we stand here to remember those that simply had no room at the inn. And she prayed, God, help us make room in our lives and in our communities and in our city for those who get forgotten, because we remember, God, you came looking for room. Ah, when Faith prayed that prayer, I never think of that story the same way ever, ever again. You know, we don't just collect underwear under the underwear tree out there because it's a good thing to do. We do it because we want to make room for God to come into this world in a new way. We don't change the tags on the tree because we want to just feel good about ourselves. We do it because we remember that we need to make room for God to enter the season to those who may not ever get to experience the season. Be the innkeeper this year. Make room and make space for God to enter into our lives in a new way. And I know what you're saying. Pastor, you haven't looked at my to-do list yet. I get you. I feel you. What am I going to cross off the list? Well, I got to warn you, if you ever come to the church on a Friday, be careful, because I'm constructing my sermon on Friday, and chances are I'm going to ask you a question about the sermon, and your chances of being in the sermon increase a whole lot more if you walk past me on Friday. So Kelly made the mistake and talked to me on Friday. So I said, Kelly, we're talking about the innkeeper. I said, how have you learned to clear space at Christmas? And she said, Jeff, you know, it's about priorities. The innkeeper figured out what the priority was that day. They didn't have room, so we made room. And Kelly said, you know what? About 4 years ago, I figured out I didn't have the space to do the things I really wanted to do at Christmas. So I figured out the one thing that I didn't need to do anymore. And she said, for me, it was sending Christmas cards. She says, I haven't sent a Christmas card to friends or family in 4 years. And you know what? They all still love me. Right? They still do? Good. She thinks so anyway. And if they don't, it's okay. Not that Christmas cards isn't something you shouldn't do, but Kelly decided it was the one thing that would help her make more room. It was the one thing that created more stress than it did joy. Yeah, I couldn't convince my wife to cross off the Christmas card list because that gives her joy. Sending cards and the letter to family and friends is one of the ways that she finds joy in the season. So that's the one thing she shouldn't cross off. But Kelly looked at it and said, that's the one thing I'm doing because it's something people expect me to be doing and it doesn't give me joy. Find the things in this season that give you joy and focus in on those things. And if there's something you're doing simply because you think it's what you must do at Christmas, I'm here to tell you, make room for God to come in and enter your story. Back to that subway station for a moment. Who noticed the violin player? The kids. The kids. Who notices when God comes into our midst? It's the kids. Who reminds us what Christmas can really be about? It's our kids. If you get confused, ask a kid what they really want for Christmas. And if you don't have a kid in your life, come get ours. That would de-stress our lives a lot. We're happy to share. We really, really are. You know, if somebody would have put a sign on that subway station today, hey, the world's greatest musician is playing in there today, people would have stopped and congregated. They would have filled out. The word would have spread throughout the streets. People would have noticed. They would have appreciated. They would have made room for the gift in their life. But nobody told them. Maybe that's why so many people miss the joy of Christmas. For after all, it's just a little baby born in a manger. Yes, we say that that baby changes all the world. But I'm here today to tell you, just in case nobody didn't, that's the masterpiece being played in the midst of the busyness of our lives. Don't miss it. Make room for it. Because if you do, it turns everything else upside down.
We remember the birth of Jesus the Christ. We have been told stories of old. God came as a child to change the destiny of all men, to show forgiveness to sinners. To believe such things is misguided. The truth is, he was just an ordinary man who lived an ordinary life. Those who do not believe the truth say, we proclaim his name, Emmanuel, God with us. We share the wonder of the shepherds. We sing the songs of the angels. This is not what is real. Shepherds were not awakened by angelic announcement. There were no wise men celebrating the birth of the king. I'd be lying to you if I said that for the creator of the universe, there was no room in the inn. For the Son of God, there was but a humble stable. Whether you like it or not, this is the reality of Christmas. That's what I used to think. But then I made room for him in my heart, and Jesus turned it all upside down. This is the reality of Christmas, whether you like it or not. There was but a humble stable for the Son of God. There was no room in the inn for the creator of the universe. I'd be lying to you if I said that there were no wise men celebrating the birth of the king, that shepherds were not awakened by angelic announcement. This is not what is real. We sing the song of the angels. We share the wonder of the shepherds. We proclaim his name, Emmanuel, God with us. Those who do not believe the truth say he was just an ordinary man who lived an ordinary life, but to believe such things is misguided. The truth is, to show forgiveness to sinners, to change the destiny of all men, God came as a child. We've been told stories of old. We remember the birth of Jesus Christ.
Y'all got that, right? It was backwards and flipped around. Okay, good. Friends, let us make room for that story to turn our lives upside down. And let's do it by ending our time together in song. Will you stand?